You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking American League East with MLB.com's AL East B reporters. And we are right up against the trade deadline, so we are talking trades. Taking a look at the possibilities of a guy like Justin Upton or Carlos Gonzalez to the Orioles, as well as what they might do if they are not able to make a move like that. Talking about the David DeJesus trade that the Rays already made, who else they might move and what they might be looking for. We talk Yankees, we'll be looking at the possibility of bringing in a top-line starter, looking at what they might do about second base, and asking about the tantalizing possibility of Jose Reyes in pinstripes. We talk Red Sox, we'll be talking Cole Hamels, the rotation, how they might find a number one starter, if not by trade, Ruisne Castillo and Jackie Bradley Jr. And we'll be breaking down all angles of the Troy Tulowitzki deal with the Blue Jays and also what they may still do about their starting rotation. Bill, as usual, the Rays are interesting. A team in contention, in the hunt, parts with a veteran piece shortly before the deadline. What was the thought process with the trade of David DeJesus?
Well, it goes back really to the way they went into spring training. It was kind of an awkward fit having him around when they had Jason coming back. It was kind of like the same roles. So really kind of surprising to find him on the roster at this time late in the season. But it was kind of a good thing that he ended up staying with them when he did, because Jason went down and he gave him, you know, some good at-bats and results during his time with him. But I think they were kind of the mindset that it was a good deal to want to get something for him and save $3 million. And, you know, they really didn't have a place for him going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of the interesting thing here is what they potentially do now. You know, you mentioned the contract, and DeJesus has had some, not a ton of money coming his way the rest of the year. You know, the rest of this year, some on the order of, if I'm reading this right, $1.5 million, $1.75 million, but that's not nothing. Does that maybe free them up to make an add somewhere else where they might need help? Does clearing that salary maybe put them in position to be a buyer at some other position?
Any money always helps with this organization. I really don't think they're going to be buyers or sellers, though, once this thing goes down. I think they're pretty happy with their bullpen. I don't think they're going to get any kind of offensive bump with, they would need a major offensive bump to get anything. So I think they're really looking at, or hoping that when Desmond Jennings comes back and Drew Smiley, that it's going to have the feel of, you know, picking up somebody at the trade deadline. But, all in all, they actually look like they're, amazingly, for the tailspin they've been in, they are still in contention right at this trade deadline. So, who knows? And saw Jennings yesterday. Jennings was hitting batting practice. He looks healthy. He had a smile on his face. It feels good. And this guy can play when he's healthy, but he's not been healthy very often.
Yeah, I mean, you note something interesting to me, which is that for as difficult as this season has been, and now they're well back in the American League East as the Yankees have really made a nice run here, they're 2.5 out for the second wild card and only chasing two teams for that spot. Now, I'm looking at the standings here, 1, 2, 3, 4 teams right behind them. So they're certainly, it is a big pack that they are in, but they're in decent position. So, and I know we've talked about this before, but as the day gets closer, certainly equations change. So, you know, how do they view this? Do they view this as a real opportunity in contention, something to seize on, or do they view this almost as kind of playing with house money after they did some pretty significant overhauls over the last 12 months?
I think you would go with house money. It's tough because I would go house money and the other, because I think they still feel very much like they're in this thing. And just today I was thinking about what would happen if they did get into the postseason, and say you've got a true guy who's looking like a number one in Archer, and then, a couple of good number two candidates, and then you got, a guy with overpowering stuff in the bullpen and McGee, and, a lot of times that's a pretty good recipe for postseason success. So it could be interesting, but, the pendulum I think they're kind of waiting for the pendulum to swing back the other way and hoping that some of these guys can give them that lift, you know. On top of that, who knows what happens if Longoria ends up getting hot, if he ends up, you know, starting to hit. There's a lot of things, and Cabrera, even though in this game today he's had a couple of misplays in the field, you know, he's got a home run today. He came back from his hamstring thing and didn't even go for a rehab game. And he just looks fresh as, you know, the first day of spring training. So a lot of positives going forward, but, you know, probably the overriding thing you still worry about the team is just their inability to score runs. And, you know, obviously 10 runs last night was an aberration.
They may soon be getting somebody back who could help with that. You mentioned Desmond Jennings. He's a guy who seems to be on the way. How far away is he, and what can they really expect when he comes back?
You know, I've always liked him when he's been healthy. You know, it's just been tough keeping him on the field. And I know it was ridiculous as this sounds. He looked great during spring training, and, I mean, it felt like he was hitting about 900 in spring training. So once the season started, you weren't surprised to see things kind of go back the other way as, you know, it gets tough to maintain that kind of pace, whether or not you're hitting against the little leaguers. So, you know, his numbers don't look good for the start of the season, but, you know, he definitely can be somebody, a major upgrade in their lineup as to what they've had out there. So, and the way they like to mix and match, you know, he could give them a real lift, I think.
I've been intrigued to read about some of the guys this team might consider parting with, and you see a guy like Jake McGee, who's probably going to get more expensive next year. You see a guy like Kevin Jepsen, who is not a long-term piece, and you can kind of understand that. But Brad Boxberger's name comes up, and I find that absolutely puzzling. This guy is signed long-term pretty cheaply, and he's really good. Are they actually even listening to offers on him, or is this just a case of other teams calling and saying, hey, we'd really like to have this guy?
Well, first off, they always listen to offers on everybody. So I'm with you, you know, of those guys, he's probably the one who's most attractive for the Rays to keep based on, you know, control and what they're paying him. I think the matter comes down to whether or not, you know, what you could trade some of these guys for and what they were offering back, you know, keeping your eye on the present while looking towards the future, as they always like to say. You know, for example, the Dodgers have some prospects they would never, you know, they say they'll never trade. You know, what happens if you package some of these guys in that? Who knows, maybe even a Longoria. But, you know, these are remote possibilities, I think. And, you know, they always listen to everybody. Even Silverman was saying yesterday, you know, you listen, but very few of those things come to fruition.
If they were to move, and again, I, you know, as I think we're both in agreement, Boxberger, they just have to be blown away. But if they were to part with somebody like Jepsen, who, you know, is a good pitcher, but for that organization is replaceable, is a guy that you can kind of move and do some bolster your organization and ideally not really miss him. What would they be looking for? Would that just be depth, or is that a guy they could use maybe to get a bench bat or something?
Well, you know, it's just like when I talked to Stu Sternberg last week, you know, he was talking about sometimes how difficult it is to identify what it is that would, you know, would help click, you know, with the team. In particular, you know, everybody screams for offense, but they're very particular about who they give a bat to because he's got to have a glove as well. So, you know, because they feel like their whole formula is pitching and defense. Who's the guy who you could bring in and stick in that mold? I mean, I think they've got plenty of guys they could bring up to fill Jepsen's role. You know, Bilotti's done a great job. You know, they've got several guys. But, you know, maybe if they could identify one offensive piece, and who knows, in the coming weeks, and I would expect it probably to be after the trade deadline, because that's normally when, you know, players clear waivers, and it's more in the Rays budget at that time.
Brian, the Yankees have been quiet, not just in moves, but even in terms of the rumor mill. Just broadly, is there anything shaking with this club?
Yeah, I mean, they're engaged with the trade market, but I feel like they have been telling teams that they do not want to part with their top prospects, and that's kind of been a roadblock here. I mean, look, they have the stuff. If they really wanted to go out and push for a Cole Hamels, and they were willing to dangle Luis Severino, Aaron Judge, Brent Bird, Jorge Mateo, those are the top four names you keep hearing. I think they could definitely engage the Phillies and probably be the best offer on the table. But as of thus far, Brian Cashman has been pretty steadfast. He does not want to do that. They feel like that talent is close enough to the big league level that it could be helping them this year, maybe next year. But, I mean, there is a chance you're going to see Luis Severino out of the rotation or the bullpen in the next few weeks. So I think that's something that the Yankees are weighing. Cashman has said it's not that easy to add payroll, regardless of what people may think. They do have to pay a luxury tax penalty on anything they do add. So, you know, while it's easy on paper to say, oh, the Yankees should go get Cole Hamels or maybe David Price, there is other things at play here. So maybe it's more likely to get Price, a guy who can slot in at the top of the rotation. I think they've been in holding pattern, waiting to see what the Tigers would do. Reports now are that the Tigers are willing to cash it in and try to retool a little bit. So we'll see where that goes. But I feel like everybody's been in a little bit of a holding pattern waiting for that to happen.
One of the names they were mentioned with was Cueto before he was moved. Were they ever a serious player for him, or did that not really ever gain any traction?
Yeah, as far as I can tell, it didn't really gain much traction. I think they were engaged. You know, obviously when a player like Johnny Cueto is out on the open market, you want to touch base and see where it's going to go. But as I said, since the Yankees are deciding to hold on to those top prospects, I think that has been a stumbling point for a lot of teams with negotiations in the Yankees. So they're out there, they're engaged, they're looking for things that can upgrade. But Cashman has also said if they do wind up standing pat or going with what they have, he does feel comfortable with that at this time. So whether that's just talk or if that really is how they feel, I mean, look, the team put up 21 runs last night. The starting pitching, could they use another starter? Sure. Could they shore up the bullpen and really make that a lockdown strength of the team and kind of replicate what the Royals did last year? They could do that. But I think that they're in first place. They're probably a playoff team the way they're constructed right now. And so they should be okay, even if they aren't able to do something before July 31st.
To go back to Hamels, it's an interesting question. He's an interesting guy to me because he gets mentioned with number one guys. But I think if you're being honest, and particularly if you take away the postseason resume, which is excellent and which is real, it happened. It's not like it never happened. But I think a fair and reasonable assessment of Cole Hamels is that he isn't a one. He's not David Price, Felix Hernandez, Clayton Kershaw. He's clearly a step down from those guys. He's a really good pitcher. He's a high-end two. He could certainly start game one for a lot of teams in a playoff series. But my point in this is, if he were a one, if we were talking about a guy who was a clear number one starter, number one in a playoff series for anybody, one of those guys, Scherzer, one of that type of pitcher, would they be more willing to part with the guys they're not willing to part with? In other words, is part of why those guys are untouchable in these deals because Cole Hamels is really good, but he's not a franchise-changing kind of player?
I think there's truth to that. But look, the Yankees see that Aaron Judge could be their starting opening day right fielder next year. They think that Severino could help them this year. Greg Bird is on the rise. They know that at some point Mark Teixeira is probably not going to be playing first base anymore for them. I think there's probably truth to that, that if you were looking at the greatest pitcher in the history of the world, yeah, they would be a little bit more touchable. But, look, Hamels is a pretty good pitcher. I think the guys like Price are out there, and that's very tempting. You need to have that ace-type starting pitcher. And I think that's why the Yankees could go get a guy the second tier without parting with their top talents. They could go get Mike Leake from the Reds, for example. I think that's a guy that they easily could get. Maybe you need to part with Gary Sanchez or Rob Refsnyder or somebody like that. I don't sense that is a huge upgrade over having Masahiro Tanaka, Michael Pineda, and, you know, they're going to probably give the ball to CeCe Sabathia. He'd probably be their number four starter in a playoff series. You've got Nate Eovaldi. You've got Ivan Nova. There are some question marks there, but I don't sense that Leake would be your clear number one, for example, over Tanaka and Pineda. And so I think if you're not going to get a guy who can take the ball in game one or game two, then I'm not sure it's really worth making the trade.
So maybe that's the better question. If David Price is really available, do those untouchables become a little more touchable?
To me, they do. The question is, does Brian Cashman feel that way for a rental player? And is this the kind of guy that you're just going to get for 2 or 3 months, or are you going to lock him up long term? So I think that's all part of it. I think you're looking at a developing situation here. As of yesterday, you didn't even know if this was going to happen. Now it's looking like the tea leaves are saying it will happen. So I think that a lot can happen between now and 4 p.m. on Friday, and I would not be shocked to see the Yankees very heavily in that.
So putting all of that aside, which, if we're being honest, in the end probably doesn't happen just because really big deals are hard to make work, and they don't want to part with those guys. What do they do? What are the upgrades over the next 47 and a half hours as we talk? What is out there that this team would like to add that would make them better?
You know, it's funny. I feel like 2 weeks ago I crushed Stephen Drew. I said he absolutely cannot be the starting second baseman anymore. They've seen enough. They called up Ref Snyder. I'm sure they were listening to this podcast and heard what I said and called up Ref Snyder. They gave him four games. He played all right. And now they're back to Stephen Drew and Brendan Ryan, and they're getting production out of that spot. So I think that you could look at this as a playoff team, and they could survive with Stephen Drew hitting below 200 as long as he keeps hitting for power. I think they would like to upgrade there. They know it's below league average at the position there. But second base is kind of a thin market. You saw what Ben Zobrist went to Kansas City. He's off the board. Could they probably deal with the Marlins and take on some money and get Martin Prado back? That might be a move worth looking into, depending on the cost. But as I said, they're certainly not going to give up any of those top echelon prospects for Martin Prado, a guy that they had last year and then traded away. So would he make them marginally better, incrementally better? Yeah, I think he would. I think there's probably names out there that you could get, but you're not going to go get a Robinson Cano, for example, just to name a guy. You're not going to be able to put that talent player at second base. So if you have to sink or swim with Stephen Drew, I mean, at least he's playing good defense. Maybe you hope the bat has come around. So I think that they would do that. I think they would upgrade the pitching if they can, whether it's in the rotation or in the bullpen. I mean, they've apparently turned down a deal with Jorge Mateo and for Craig Kimbrell with the Padres. But, I mean, you can fantasize a little bit about having a bullpen with Kimbrell, Betances, and Andrew Miller. I think that pretty much replicates what Kansas City was doing last year. So I think that that's one avenue where they probably could go economically. Maybe you don't wind up getting a Kimbrell, but you can get another arm for the back of that bullpen.
I'm disappointed at the degree to which you're discounting Brendan Ryan's importance to the salvaging of the second base situation. is the fact that Didi Gregorius is coming around, he's not lighting up the world, but he's getting to where his season line is pretty adequate for a good defensive shortstop. Does that in any way kind of reduce the pressure on Drew? The point being, if you're only looking at one spot that's really underperforming, is that a little easier to swallow than looking at your entire middle infield and saying something's got to get better here and we're committed to Gregorius?
Of course, yeah. You can live with that. If you've got one guy who's below average, you can live with that. But I think this is not the Didi Gregorius we saw in April and May. He's had a three-hit game, a four-hit game, and that's this week alone. He's driving in runs. He's playing good ball, and I don't expect him to get three or four hits every night, but you're seeing steps of progress here. They knew that this was going to be a player that they were going to watch develop before their eyes, similar to Evaldi, and you're starting to see progress there. I don't hear anybody complaining about Gregorius' defense anymore. He doesn't look as tentative or hesitant as he did in the field back in April. Just a guy who seems to have been getting comfortable here, and maybe there's a lot to coming to New York and following Derek Jeter and putting on the pinstripes on opening day in April and trying to do too much. And maybe now he's found kind of a happy medium where he can just play like Didi Gregorius, which is all the Yankees wanted all along.
One name you didn't mention that we talked about during the week that I have to ask about, because for a lot of reasons it would be headline gold and a ton of fun. Is there any way at all that Jose Reyes could be the second baseman for the New York Yankees?
How about that? Yeah, I mean... Yeah, that would be a great headline. I don't see it as a fit. I think that the Yankees are committed there to Gregorius is short, first of all. But then, look, the Mets did put Jose Reyes at second base once upon a time to try and create playing time for Kaz Matsui, which I don't think any of us still understand to this day. I think the cost is what is going to hurt that situation there. Remember, the Yankees would have to pay a tax on top of anything that they're adding here. So really, $20 million becomes a lot more than that. I just don't see it as an in-season acquisition. I don't expect that Reyes is going to stay in Colorado very long, but I don't see Yankee Stadium as the next destination for him.
Brett, I continue to be perplexed, and I imagine you do too, because things just kind of don't add up with this team when we talk trade deadline. Because, as you know, you look at what they have, you look at what they're willing to part with, you look at what traditionally they've been willing to do, and it doesn't add up to anything big. And yet the Orioles continue to get mentioned with guys like Justin Upton, and in particular with Justin Upton. Do you think that's doable? Do you think that there is some way that financially and prospect-wise they could swing a deal to bring Justin Upton to Baltimore?
I think they could pull it off. I mean, I was told by someone on the San Diego side that the Orioles have the pieces to pull it off. They're just reluctant to deal those pieces. So I guess the answer is it depends. I mean, are they willing to go all in on a rental again? You know, you look at what they did last year, trading away Eduardo Rodriguez, which was a move you had to make, a move you'd probably make again. But they were also, you know, a good 10 games over 500 at the break. They were a team that looked like the team that was going to run away with the American League East. And, of course, that's what they ended up doing. So I don't know if you decide that you're going to go all in this year because, quite frankly, you're just not the same team. You're not as good of a team. So I think if they're going to make a move, that they'd like not get a rental. You get a guy who's under team control for another year or two because otherwise, again, you have a thin farm system. You're giving up a top prospect, a guy like Eduardo Rodriguez, who already has made a mark for Boston this season, for essentially a guy you're going to rent for 2 months. So I don't see the Orioles getting Justin Upton or any other rental type of player. I don't think they're in the position to be trying to mortgage their future for rentals. I think they've got to think ahead. They've got to be smart and look at ways to upgrade the team that don't just leave them hamstrung the following year.
Upton is an interesting guy, though, and I absolutely hear you, and again, that adds up with what we know. The one thing I wonder about with him in particular, though, is he's a guy who has made it really clear that, you know, he values comfort. He loved, you know, in Atlanta he was relatively close to home. Baltimore is even closer to home than Atlanta, and so you do, or I wonder at least, you know, is he a guy and that you bring in and try and convince he wants to stick around? And so I guess the question I'm actually asking here is, do you see the potential that they could play in the market for a guy like that this winter free agent in free agency? And if so, does that maybe affect their willingness to try and bring him in? It's something the Cardinals used to do. Bring the guy in, convince him, hey, you want to be here, get a read on what he is, and then sign him.
Potentially, though, it's a hard sell, Matthew, because you look at all those free agents and they're probably going to lose, and you kind of say, hey, don't you want to be here? And I think guys might look around and say, well, I don't know. There's no Chris Davis. There's no Matt Wieters. There's no, you know, there's no Darren O'Day. There's Tommy Hunter is gone. And you know, you look around and Wei-Yin Chen is gone, all these free agents. You say, maybe I don't want to be here. So I don't know if they feel so confident about that. If they get a guy, that they can sign him and pay him the kind of money that's going to make him say, yeah, I really want to stay here. They've struggled in the past to keep free agents, and I just don't see anything that's going to change that trend.
And so that leads to another interesting name. If they do, in fact, as we've talked about, if they'd like to bring in a big-time, a middle-of-the-lineup outfielder, a guy that they've been sort of mentioned with less prominently, but still there's been some buzz, is Carlos Gonzalez, and that's a guy who is signed for two more years, a guy who really might kind of be a central piece. And the other thing I wonder about is, does the Tulowitzki deal maybe open any eyes? The Rockies got one really good prospect for Tulowitzki, but it was not the kind of package I think the teams would really dread to part with. And so when you see that, does that maybe say, oh, I wonder what would happen if we called on Gonzalez. Is that a name that might make some sense for them?
That's a name that I think might make a little bit more sense for them. And I have kind of heard that name a little bit. And, of course, the question when you're talking on the Rockies is what are they going to get? You know, what is going to make it worth their while? Is there any kind of player that the Orioles are willing to give up that's going to net a return like that? And I think that's kind of the biggest issue, Matthew. They don't have a strong farm system. They don't have the guys that Toronto has that they're willing to part with. They're two top pitching prospects, Hunter Harvey and Dylan Bundy, are both hurt. So they're not willing to trade part of their right now, and those are guys like Jonathan Scope and Kevin Gausman and Manny Machado, which is what teams are interested in. They're not willing to trade those guys because they're a big part of what they're trying to do, but they don't really have anything enticing enough down below. So it's an interesting situation. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't see how, if they don't change something, they're able to get anybody of any value back.
And that kind of leads in, again, I feel like I ask the same questions every week, but the same questions are what's relevant for this team. They're so interesting. If, and again, it adds up, you know, if it adds up that this is not, probably one of these guys is not something they can do, but at the same time, as you note, their window is now. I mean, this is, we kind of think of the Orioles as this machine that kind of self-perpetuates. It's such a well-run organization that they're good this year, they're going to be good next year. We kind of think of this as not a built-for-now team, but their window is now, and so given that, what can they do in the next 50 hours as we speak that would bolster them, that would increase their chances of at least a wild card, that strengthens this team to get to where I think they'd be a danger in the postseason. I think they get there, they're a team to be reckoned with. So what can they do if it's not something big to bolster this roster and get there?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's one that kind of I've been asking myself and will continue to over the next few days. I don't know. I think if there was an obvious move, we'd all be talking about it and say, well, this is it. This is what they should do. I don't know if there's a move that makes them considerably better, but I do think that there's probably a Dan Duquette type of move, a marginal move that helps them, whether it's in the outfield or whether it's in the bullpen, that they can say, all right, we're going to be a little bit better. This allows us at least a little roster flexibility. I think that's the key for them, is getting somebody and being able to kind of close ties with at least two or three of the guys on their roster, because they have so many guys who are out of options who they can't do anything with. So I think once they are able to find what they deem a suitable upgrade, it'll just make it a little bit easier roster-wise. I mean, right now, if they were to call up a reliever, they'd really be hamstrung. They'd have to lose another position player, and they've done it so many times. So I think it's going to be a smaller move. I don't know what they're going to be able to do. I don't know what caliber player they're going to be willing to get. It all depends on what kind of prospects they're willing to deal. I mean, does Zach Davies, who was in the Futures game where they're very high of in AAA, is he a guy who they make available in the right deal? He's not someone they want to move, but they could make him available. So it's a lot of wait and see right now, and a lot of teams are on the fence and don't know where they're going, and I think that lends to a lot of the uncertainty.
One thing you mentioned in a recent story at Orioles.com, at TheOrioles.com, that I thought was intriguing was the possibility of parting with members of the Major League bullpen, of you know, Brian Mattis or Tommy Hunter being guys who might have trade value. Is that something they would think about, parting with, not as a seller, but parting with one of those guys from what is a deep unit in order to upgrade somewhere else on the roster?
Yes, it's something that they're definitely thinking about. It's something that they've offered for many different players, and a lot of times they're out of their league. You know, you can't offer Tommy Hunter and Brian Mattis to the Padres and say, hey, take this for Justin Upton. That's just not going to happen. But it's definitely something that they've put on the table, players that they've made available. They feel good about their AAA Norfolk pitching staff depth. So it is something to watch. Those two guys could definitely get moved.
And then to sort of check in on elsewhere on the roster, anything shaken with Bud Norris, with his kind of limbo? I mean, what anything? I know they'd like to move him. That doesn't look like it's going to happen. Is he just kind of where he is, pitching out of the bullpen for a while?
Yeah, he's kind of in limbo. I had heard that the Cubs had a little interest, but I would think if any team had a little interest, that they'd be willing to move him and he'd already be there. So I don't know how much credence is really to that. But, you know, they're listening. They'd like to move him. I think Bud would probably welcome maybe a fresh start somewhere. But right now, he's an injury away from being back in that rotation. And he's a free agent at the end of the year. So this is big for him, too, to pitch well and help elevate his stock. So nothing really new. I'd be surprised if they were able to move him at the deadline. I think they'd have to eat a good chunk of that salary. But, again, you just never know.
And so does that mean that, and again, with the full understanding that, especially with the Orioles, nothing is really permanent. Everything can change. But does that mean that, at least for the time being, Kevin Gausman is in the rotation full stop?
Yeah, they said they're going to give him an extended look, and he's had a couple starts up here since the second half. I would imagine, unless he has two or three real clunkers, that he's going to stay in that rotation. I mean, they want to see what they have in him. They want to get his innings up, too, for next year. So I would imagine, yeah, barring a really bad stretch, they're going to see what he has. He's going to get every opportunity to succeed in the rotation.
Matthew Leach talking Toronto Blue Jays with one of the hardest working men on MLB.com, Gregor Chisholm, who must feel like he's covering, I don't even know what the example would be, but certainly they have kept you busy all year. And most recently, it's Troy Tulowitzki arriving in a deal that started going down sometime after midnight earlier this week. And there's a lot to ask and a lot to talk about, but one of the things you touched on that I thought was really interesting, and I feel like is a big part of this, is what does this move say about the long term here? Because I think there was some perception that the Jays put together a window that was ending this year. They traded for a bunch of guys, and the whole idea was they had them for this 2 or 3 year span, and they needed to win then. And as you noted, with the addition of Tulowitzki, Donaldson, Russell Martin, they now appear to have a core that you can continue to build around for a few years beyond that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this really was an organization that really since 2013 we've been talking about basically this three-year window that would kind of go up until this year. And you could probably extend that one more to next year as well. But after next year, you've got, Jose Bautista set to hit free agency. You've got Edwin Encarnacion set to hit free agency. There is going to be an awful lot of uncertainty surrounding this organization over the next 12 months. But since then, we've seen, you know, a lot of transition over the last 6 months or so, bringing in Donaldson, bringing in Martin, and now Tulowitzki. Now you've got those three as kind of your future core. And while Bautista and Encarnacion, guys like that, aren't going anywhere right now, now it opens up the possibility that this team has a solid core in place now for a number of years and not just this immediate window to compete right in the here and now. That's obviously a goal, but this kind of extends the long-term future outlook of this organization as well. It's not usually a type of deal that you would see at this time of year. This is usually something you would see more in the offseason, kind of similar to when the Jays were able to get Donaldson. So that's why I think, a lot of people were so caught off guard the timing of this situation. You just don't usually see superstar player for superstar player swapped at this time of year.
What's their level of confidence that they'll be able to keep Tulowitzki on the field?
Yeah, that's, in a lot of ways, a lot of the topics of conversation, a lot of the questions are very similar to the ones that were being asked when the Blue Jays originally acquired Jose Reyes back in 2013. There are some similar concerns there with the health, and the turf is obviously going to be a big talking point as well, because that's something Tulowitzki has never really had to deal with in his career. That does seem to kind of affect guys with back issues a little bit more than legs, or in Tulowitzki's case, the hip. I don't think a lot of the issues that Reyes dealt with his legs were specifically related to the turf. A lot of times he got hurt. It happened to be on road games. But, we know the surface can really wear down bodies over a period of time. The new surface they have this year seems to be a bit better, but those concerns haven't completely gone away. And, ultimately, whether or not this trade works out for the Blue Jays, when we look back at this in 3 or 4 years from now, it's a lot of that's going to come down to Tulowitzki's health. When he's healthy, he's known as being one of the best, if not the best, shortstop in baseball. But there has been an inability to stay on the field as well. And that's something that, in order for the Jays to kind of maximize the long-term value of this, they're going to have to find a way to consistently have him in the lineup.
It does seem that one thing this club has actually been able to do pretty well is maintain guys like them. Reyes has certainly had a couple of issues, but they really maintained him pretty well. Bautista's a guy who deals with a lot of nagging issues, and yet they still managed to keep him on the field. Encarnacion, it's kind of a glass half empty, glass half full. You can look and see guys missing time, but I think if you're judging them fairly, it seems like this training staff and this coaching staff pretty much succeeds at keeping guys with questions on the field more often than not. Is there a level of confidence from the way they've handled guys like that they can also maintain Tulowitzki and minimize the amount of time he misses?
Yeah, I think so. And, when you kind of look at Reyes, there was the sprained ankle injury that happened in Kansas City, and there's nothing that they could do about that. Then he had a shoulder injury last year that really had nothing to do with the daily grind that comes with playing at Rogers Center. And you're right, they've been able to find a way to have Bautista this year miss the DL. And it's kind of an interesting talking point because, it wasn't that long ago that the storyline was kind of the complete opposite. The 2013 season was completely derailed by injuries. And, you know, even going back before that, when John Farrell was still in town, it seemed like they had countless pitching injury after pitching injury. But this year in particular, you know, injuries really haven't had a major impact on this team, at least injuries that have forced guys out of lineups. You know, besides, with the exception of Devin Travis, you know, for the most part, they've been able to, and Marcus Stroman in spring training, but during the season, they've mostly been able to survive by having all their regular players. And that's something that couldn't always be said in the past about this organization. So when you look at the record that they currently have, health certainly can't be pointed as one of the reasons why they are around the 500 mark.
So the really big question then is, what's next? They still clearly need a starting pitcher. I mean, I think they improved their run prevention. They're probably going to be a better defensive team, but they still clearly need a starting pitcher. And they still have some guys who conceivably could bring in a quality starting pitcher. So where do they go? Where are they looking at upgrading their rotation over the next 47 hours as we speak?
Yeah, it's something that they're going to have to get done if they have you know, realistic aspirations of contending this year over the final 2 months. I mean, pitching is obviously the biggest need. And you know, I think that's another reason why everyone was so surprised this week. You know, it was surprising in the first place that Jeff Hoffman, their top prospect, was dealt. But it was even more surprising that he wasn't dealt for immediate help on pitching. So, but you're right, there are other pieces down there that they can use to get, you know, a deal done. Daniel Norris obviously becomes the main trade chip at this point. They also have a guy like Dalton Pompey as a promising outfielder that they could potentially look to move. And then a lot of the other guys are kind of in the lower levels in the minors. So I don't know if they're going to have enough or be willing to part with enough to get a really big piece like, you know, a David Price or, you know, even a Jeff Samardzija if the White Sox eventually decide to deal with him later this week. I don't know if they have, you know, the pieces or willing to give up the pieces to get those two guys. But I think you could be looking at a situation where, you know, I think it's still, I don't think there's any doubt that they're going to get something done. I just don't think it's going to be the big name. I think you might be looking at you know, more of those mid-rotation type guys, kind of like a Mike Leake that we've heard a lot of rumors about this year, someone along those lines. I still think Iwakuma from Seattle would be a really nice pickup for them. Someone who might be a little bit notch below some of the biggest names that other teams are out there talking about right now.
Can they take on payroll this year? I mean, because the Tulowitzki deal was essentially cash neutral for 2015, can they take on some payroll this year still?
They should be able to. And you know, that I think that's one of the biggest benefits of that Tulowitzki deal is that it doesn't impact, you know, the salary this year, and it also doesn't really impact the salary over the next 2 years. You know, there is a long-term commitment there, and there is a, you know, huge salary obligation, but, you know, a lot of that now comes a few years down the road. So the short-term picture, you know, everything remains relatively the same. You know, LaTroy Hawkins was on a very affordable contract. You prorate that. There's not a lot more owed on that as well. So, you know, the Blue Jays kind of find themselves in the similar boat. I don't think they're going to be taking on any kind of massive financial contributions, but they would certainly have enough left in the bank to acquire a rental-type player or a guy who even has a little bit more control left but isn't making, you know, a ton of money this year. But they should still kind of have, you know, at least a few million dollars to kind of work with in order to get that upgrade.
Is there anything else you could still see them doing, maybe adding one more reliever or depth in the outfield or anything like that?
Well, the direction that they really seem to be going, just the sense is that, you know, they do seem to be kind of going away from that rental market a little bit. You know, one thing Alex Anthopoulos does very well is playing very coy and coming up with these deals that almost, you know, nobody sees coming. I wouldn't be surprised at all if you know, one of the long-term targets is to try and add a starter that has a little bit more control. And then with that, I think you would probably look to expand the deal. And I think that's when you could possibly be looking at, you know, adding an outfielder in there as well. You know, upgrading left field isn't a top priority by any means, but it's a piece that they could use, you know, especially with the status of Michael Saunders. I don't think there's any expectation now that he's going to be able to come back and contribute. You know, he's saying all the right things. So he wants to come back in September. But, I mean, this is a guy who hasn't played all year and still isn't getting in any kind of rehab games. At some point, you have to kind of leave your expectations at the door. So, you know, that's a spot where they've been kind of going with a rotation of Danny Valencia, Chris Colabello, Ezekiel Carrera. You could do well to get an upgrade there as well. And that could be probably a bit of a secondary piece. I don't think you're going to really see the Jays make a big move that's isolated to an outfielder or a reliever. But if there's a deal out there to be had for a starting pitcher, I think what they would try to do is make the package a little bit bigger and get that secondary piece in the deal as well.
It's been easy to kind of put two and two together for a long time and see the Red Sox and Phillies as a match on Cole Hamels. The Red Sox have money, the Red Sox have prospects, and the Red Sox have need for a starting pitcher, not just this year, but going forward. But, you know, when we look realistically, it does not seem like they've ever, at least recently, not since the spring, been one of the major players for Hamels. It does seem like they're not really in the hunt the way some other teams are right now. And the most recent reports indicate that that may be in part due to Hamels' no-trade protection and the Red Sox being one of the teams on there. So, first, is that your read that they're not really in play for him? And second, if not, how do they fill that need, which is not just a short-term need but a medium- to long-term need?
Yeah, no, I think that the Red Sox and Phillies had talked quite a bit in the winter time, and the Phillies made it pretty obvious that it was either Mookie Betts or Blake Swihart, and that the package was going to be built around one of the two guys. And the Red Sox has steadfastly said, "Look, these two guys, we're not going to trade these two guys." And I just think that they're waiting for the Phillies to come down off that. And you know, the way this thing has gone, and the Red Sox have fallen out of the pennant race, you know, some of these other teams are going to be more compelled, you know, come through with a big offer for Hamels. They're trying to win this year. So the Red Sox is more about next year and the year after. So, you know, for that reason, I think the Red Sox are a dark horse. The trade clause thing, the no trade thing, I always take that with a grain of salt because, look, people get stuff out there for leverage this time of year. I think that was probably leaked out, you know, to compel the Red Sox to maybe up their offer a little bit so the Phillies would take them more seriously. So, I don't think it would be the no trade thing as much as just, like I said, other teams who really want to win now, maybe paying, $1.50 on the dollar for Hamels instead of, straight up deal.
So not to fast forward too much, because there is still more than 2 months of baseball to be played in the 2015 regular season, and stranger things have happened than this Red Sox team charging into the playoffs. I covered a stranger thing myself not that long ago, so it's not inconceivable. But with that said, let's fast forward a little to the winter. Does this mean that the Red Sox will likely be a serious bidder for one of these top free agent starters who presumably are going to hit the market this winter, David Price, Johnny Cueto? Does it seem likely that they will go in on one of those guys this offseason?
Yes, absolutely. The Red Sox have to go in on one of these guys. I mean, it's just they tried to piece it together this year. They didn't see the guy they wanted to replace John Lester this offseason, so they kind of said, we're going to piece it together what we have, and that obviously hasn't worked very well. So I think in a place like Boston, where you have a high payroll, you have a huge demand to win, you have a very competitive ownership, you spent a lot of money on hitting last winter, I think you're going to have to make a big investment in a pitcher this winter, whether it's Cueto, whether it's Price, or whether they find a creative way to make a blockbuster trade, maybe for somebody else. But, yeah, absolutely, the Red Sox need to go out and make a substantial investment, at least by the winter meeting, in their in that starting rotation.
In the meantime, they have dealt Shane Victorino. Is Mike Napoli next? Is Koji Uehara next? I mean, do you anticipate seeing them parting with some other of these non-core pieces over the next couple of days?
Yeah, I'd be real surprised if they deal Koji, because, look, Koji's under a pretty affordable contract for next year. You know, I think the time that he signed that contract, we all raised our eyebrows and said, that's kind of a two-year deal for someone his age. Well, Koji's had a really solid year. And aside from spring training when he had the little hiccup with his leg and then his arm strength took a little while to kick in, he's been Koji pretty much this year. And, you're trying to add arms to your bullpen for next year, so I don't think you're going to subtract one like Koji, who you have under control. Mike Napoli is an interesting one. Yeah, I think that, that is a guy you could see moved in the next couple of days here. I mean, this is a guy who has a great history of postseason success, also a very streaky hitter who has come out and hit pretty well after the All-Star break, looks much more like himself. And next year you look at first base, the Red Sox might get creative where they have a Pablo Sandoval and you have a Hanley Ramirez. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if one of those guys is your first baseman next season. So, yeah, I think that they'll see what they can get for Napoli, and I'd say more likely than not he'll be moved by Friday at 4 o'clock.
one of the things that comes from moving Victorino, it appears, is a full-time job or close to it for Ruznik Castillo. Ruznik Castillo didn't really hit at AAA, and so I wonder, are there any concerns here? I mean, you sort of noted a couple times, this guy has not set the world on fire. It's only a year. Things can change. They've got him for a long time, but it's not like they sent him down to AAA and he tore it up there and forced their hand. What do they think they have in Castillo a year in now?
Yeah, I think they still think he could be a pretty good player. Look, he did earlier in the year, before the Red Sox called him up the first time, he was hitting pretty well down there. And then, he came back up. It didn't translate up here in Boston, and then he went back down to AAA. I think some guys honestly have a little bit of a letdown when they burn the major leagues for a few weeks and then they have to go back down, especially a guy like Ruznay, who is 28 years old. He's not like some young kid. And the nagging injuries, there always seems to be a nagging injury with him. So he just needs to get healthy and have a 2 to 3. We haven't seen this guy in the lineup every day for 2 to 3 weeks. I think that's what we need to see for them really to know what they have. This is still a very long-term investment they've made in this guy. They've got him for another 5 years after this season. So by no means is anybody giving up on him, but also by no means do we know quite what he is yet.
Is he going to play pretty much every day from here to the end of the year so they can find out?
Yeah, I would think that Castillo will play the bulk of the time. There might be, right now they have Diaz, who's played okay, but I think once you hit that July 31st deadline, somebody like Diaz will probably get moved. And I think Castillo's going to play the majority of the time right now. You have to give him a look. And I think that right now Mookie Betts is on the DL at least for a week with this concussion. You're also going to see Jackie Bradley. John Farrell came out and said today, look, Jackie Bradley's going to play center field every day while Mookie Betts is out. It's at the time with some of these guys where you just have to start to take stock and see what you have.
Yeah, you led into my next question and sort of answered my next question, actually, which is how does Bradley fit into this? Because, he is having a tremendous year at AAA. We know the defense. If this guy hits 70% in the majors of what he has at AAA, that's a good ball player.
Yeah, especially with his defense. And, Bradley just hasn't got, because of opportunity, the Red Sox came kind of overloaded in the outfield this year and had too many guys for too few spots. There hasn't been a lot of chances for him in the stints he's been up there. I think now, at least over this next week or two, you're going to get to see him every day and see if he can kind of get on that role at the major leagues and hit like he has in the minors in the past. So I think that the fans really like Jackie Bradley Jr., actually. They love defense here in Boston. So I think the fans would love to see him go out there and get on a little roll offensively. And he's a guy who can energize this team. Next year, like I said, if Hanley moves to the infield, maybe Bradley still factors into their future.
Yeah, that's sort of the question now is, can Bradley force this situation to be different? Can he play his way back into the Red Sox plans, or is the best-case scenario for him to play himself to a point where he is desirable to somebody else?
Yeah, I think we're sort of at the crossroads right now with Bradley, where, at the end of this year, really, you're going to know, look, the Red Sox are going forward with this guy, or he's going to go somewhere else. There's not going to be another year next year where Jackie Bradley's going up and down from the Red Sox, and you wonder, is he going to stick? Is he not going to stick? It's just it's going to be time to make a decision by then. So that's why these next few weeks, even if the Red Sox aren't in contention, we don't know if they're going to maybe climb their way back in, but there will be some storylines to watch, and certainly Bradley will definitely be one of those.
So as we talk about this team sorting out what it has for next year, and look, again, to reiterate, it is too early for this team to pack it in and just start thinking about 2016. It's way too early for that. But as we talk about these things, one of the guys that I wonder about, and I know you know exactly who I'm going to be asking about, is Joe Kelly. And look, I know he's not really even considered a full-fledged part of the rotation right now, but he keeps getting starts, and they've got guys that they like. They have one guy in particular that they like, and Brian Johnson in AAA. And so I wonder, at what point do they start really thinking about Joe Kelly as a reliever and start thinking about one of these guys at AAA, like Johnson, getting a longer look in the rotation?
Yeah, that's a great point, Matthew. And actually, John Farrell kind of alluded to this today, where he said, look, we're keeping the rotation on track right now. Joe Kelly will make his next start But he said there's going to be a time the next week or two where we're going to want to get a look at a Brian Johnson. We're going to want to get a look at a Henry Owens, much the way they're getting a look at Jackie Bradley Jr. Right now. So, yeah, Kelly is going to go out there Saturday. And, if he has another one of these starts where it's like four and a third innings, you know, seven hits, five runs, four walks, and, 103 pitches, I think we've seen the last of him in the rotation. It's just the whole thing has just been getting a little, old for people to watch, and they just haven't seen them. He sends a AAA for a month, and that just didn't really do the good they were hoping for. So, yeah, I think you would see him transition to the bullpen. I'm sure he won't be happy about it, but, at the same time, he would have to admit that, he had a chance to alter the course, make it different. But, yeah, I do expect Joe Kelly to be in that bullpen in the near future.
This is MLB.com Extras. Thanks, everybody, for listening.